Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it is an absolute glorious day here in the South. How is it in your area? We are live on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and also we will be in archives on iTunes, so please do check out those links on our show page. It is a great day. You know, we are going to be talking about spirituality, psychotherapy, mental health, mental and emotional issues. If there is anyone that believes that they have escaped having some issues in this realm, probably maybe you want to sit back and listen and say, you know, never thought of that. You know, I talked to so many people that would send me emails saying, I'm really having a hard day. I'm super stuck. I really don't know what's going on. I'm having such depression. I just feel like I'm in a hole. I need somebody to talk to, or what medication can I take? We're always looking for something for that quick fix, or something that will take us out of that spot of pain or that spot of reflection. You know, we really need to maybe stop and say, what am I learning? What am I seeing? What am I hearing? And why is that so important? You know, we all like to think, we go to a doctor and we say, fix me. This is what I think is wrong. And we get some sort of treatment or diagnosis and we say, oh, that didn't work. That can't be it. And then we push, you know, the blame, or we push the, you know, emphasis on something else and say, oh, that wasn't right, or I must be worse than that or better than that, or what's going on? It is really a quandary about holistic health, but it's really important to be able to look at your mental and emotional and physical aspects and say, really, what is going on with me? Instead of just taking like, oh, I have a sore wrist, so you can fix my wrist. But it might just be my shoulder. But maybe it's the way I'm sitting at work. But maybe it's really that I'm stressed when I'm driving. That's what we talk about when we say a holistic picture. Looking back and seeing what everything could possibly be contributing to it and say, is this important? Is it not? What can I do to change it or fix it? And what do I need to put emphasis on and maybe let go? So today, my guest is Dr. Amelia Kemp. She is a psychotherapist, and her book, From Psychotherapy to Sacrotherapy, it's 8 Steps to Well-Being, which we call Alternative Holistic Descriptions and Healing Processes for 170 Mental and Emotional Diagnoses. Let me tell you, people love to have a name tagged on them, but some people don't want to have a name tagged on them. So either way, her book is fabulous because you can scan through it and you could say, this seems to be where I'm at today. Let me read a little bit about it. Let me see maybe what I think I might be able to do on my own. And maybe I'll see where I might need some help. So Dr. Kemp, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
So don't you think that, you know, mental situation or the physical situation, you know, health in an overall thing is just such, you know, a quandary these days, because we go in and we say, this is wrong, and we look at our immediate position or what's really, what we call our thorn in our side, and we just want rid of it instead of maybe looking at the whole picture, which is what your book is all about, is that looking at the whole picture.
Absolutely. I think that how we interpret what's happening with our symptoms is so crucial, because what you're talking about is pivotal when we talk about meaning. I think that everyone's life experience is based on the meaning that we attach, which is coming from our beliefs. And so what we believe about ourselves and the things that are happening in our individual experiences, I think, determines a person's moment-by-moment quality of life. And so if a person is believing that I'm sick and defective, they're going to think thoughts that's going to trigger that type of brain chemistry that's going to make them feel badly. But if they believe what I say in my book, that you're not sick, you're sacred, then they can begin to think thoughts that will trigger serotonin and release the natural healing endorphins in the brain, which I believe makes them feel good. So how we interpret things from a holistic point of view is such a broader way of looking at it, because it expands our belief system. I always say that our beliefs are like clothes because we live our lives in them. And like clothes, our beliefs can be changed or ironed out, washed out, or thrown out altogether if they no longer fit. So,
right.
So absolutely, looking at things from a place of symbolic meaning is one of the beauties of holistic health, mind, body, and spirit, that it's expansive and takes all of that into consideration.
Also, too, when we are born, everybody says, I mean, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. You know, this is your parents. This is how you grew up. This is what you're going to do. Now go out and do it. And now, you know, in this decade we are in now, life has tremendously changed, a full 360. It's more, what would you like to experience? You're not what your past was. You're not what your ancestry was. And you can be and choose whatever is open to you in the world. And I think, and I have heard from many of my clients, is that sometimes having that ritualistic stuff of, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that plan in place, it was a little easier to plan out that plan and move through those, you know, those steps along the pegs. But now that we have such a infinite, you know, scope in front of us, it's kind of harder for a lot of people. They're sitting there saying, you know, I'm in the soup, I'm in the abyss, and I have nowhere, no how, no direction, and I'm just here. Where do I go? What do I do? And, you know, sometimes it's really hard to say, you know, I'm not all of that. And then when they do let go of all of that, finding out where they are is really kind of driving a lot of people to not making such good choices.
Well, I think that even in, I'm a 60s child too, and so I think that the possibilities and the infinity or expansiveness of the choices were always there. I think we just weren't pinpointing them there, and I think that most people trying to check the boxes of the pathway that their parents or teachers taught them actually squelched a lot of people's experience, in the sense that they weren't free to listen to their own internal guidance systems. And so what I love about the new understanding, this reawakening of consciousness that seems to be happening worldwide, is that people are now having to look inside. And when we look inside, which I call that inner sanctuary, those answers are there. I think most people just haven't been still enough to tap into it. And learning how to tap into it is part of what my book shows a person, how to get back to themselves so that they can release some of the conditioning and memes, meme being that unit of thought that they inherited from society, parents, or their church, but to look at their own questioning, to find within themselves, what is it that makes me happy? What is it that I feel I came forth into the physical to do or be or have, and learn how to attract that using universal laws of attraction and universal laws of a creation to bring that into my experience, and giving them the steps of how to literally go about manifesting that, because I believe everything does begin with a thought, but spiritually a thought is not the way it's been described to most of us in our childhood. We haven't been told how valuable a thought is, or what even a thought is even made of, but that thought part of us, which stays in the invisible realm all the time, is tapping into that spiritual place that I'm talking about, which is why I say from psychotherapy to sacred therapy, because I think the ancients tried to tell us about the psyche was the study of the soul or universal mind, but I think modern medicine moved away from that and focused so much on brain chemistry. And sociology started coming up, well, we think this is the best way for mankind to come through their physical experience, and everybody had their opinion on it. But I think the individual was left out of the equation a great deal of the time, and having them search themselves for their own meaning and not try to line up with everybody else's meaning of what their life should look like or be like, or what success should look like or happiness should look like, that it's such a diverse world that I think everybody gets a chance to figure out for themselves what that path can look like.
I think so, too. A lot of times when we say we want something, let's use an example of a woman saying, I want to get married, and she sets her conquest out to get married. But really, if you look back at it, you say, well, what is it really that you're looking for? Oh, I'm looking for a man. Are you really? And then you go back a little bit further, and she may say, I'm looking for a companion. Go back a little further, I'm looking for stability. And then go back a little further, she's looking for love or compassion, or she's looking for stability and someone to talk to. She's looking for human touch, or she's looking for financial security. So there's a lot of these different words that we like to use, and I think probably like history has taught us, as we come into this new awakening part, is all about maybe rephrasing those words. You know, am I looking for a job? What is the job? And am I really looking for being able to take care of myself? I'm looking for, you know, being able to feed my children. And instead of just using those words, bringing ourselves back to more the emotions that are centered around it. And then when you do make a choice, it can be a clearer choice because you've addressed what you really were looking for instead of just saying, I'm just going to take the job, the man, the house, the husband, the money. You know, those are such antiquated words almost these days, you know. People are more saying, but they're more saying, you know, I'm looking for love or I'm looking for this. And even the children that are born now since the year 2000, they use those words. It's commonplace for them. You can listen to their music. You can watch it on TV. They use those words just as part of the vocabulary. So I think it's really the older people that are saying, wow, you know, I'm learning from my grandkids, and I'm learning how to make different choices with different vocabulary, and I think that's really where we're at in history.
I think that you're hitting on something very important because our words are an extension of thought, and so our words express our thoughts, and so the terms that we use to express them are, again, back to that meaning I was talking about in the interpretation or the symbolism of what it represents. And so if marriage, in your example, represents security for one woman or man, or if it represents love and compassion, I think that it's a way for it to be meaningful for each person because we come forth as co-creators, and so it's natural to want to have a connection with another soul that's come forth. And if marriage and that ritual is one way that one person makes that connection soul to soul, that's a beautiful thing, whereas another one may not want to marry but still have a relationship where they are connected in another way that's meaningful. I think that both of those ways are paramount, but I think that those coming from the old school sometimes tell the new souls that come forth that marriage is the only way, or this is the only traditional way that you have to do it, and so that starts interfering with another person's process of how they see it for themselves. And so I love the fact that the younger generations seem to have a better grip on not allowing interference from others who want to dictate for them how the happiness, joy of living that they came forth to be should look like. And so they do seem to honor their freedoms more readily than those of us who had much more conditioning, which is why I talk in my book on a whole chapter on conditioning and releasing any toxic conditioning that is squelching or binding a person's experience. Yeah.
I mean, when we grew up, I mean, I can remember the answers were, you know, you get yourself a job, a husband and kids, see you later. You know, you turned 18, here's the door. And hardly anybody talks like that anymore, you know. Except those that are super stuck. Those are the ones that are still talking like that. And they're the ones that are dazed and confused and finding it hard to navigate in this world. So can you tell us a little bit about what the word sacred therapy means and how you came about to use that word?
Oh, absolutely. Well, with sacred therapy, the reason the word sacred naturally is attached to the word sacred therapy. And the reason for that is because the word sacred by itself really means to be whole and complete, not religious necessarily. Spirituality and religiosity are two separate things. And so oftentimes people had asked me, did you have to be religious to embrace the sacred therapy process? And I was like, no, absolutely. You come forth as a soul that you can't be disconnected from the source. And so sacred in that sense is just the wholeness of a person's being, mind, body, and spirit is what I mean by that. And so, and then therapy, of course, is the study of a person looking at themselves, coming aware, consciously aware of who they are and what it is that they want out of this particular physical experience versus just psychotherapy. The reason I say from psychotherapy to sacred therapy is because psychotherapy generally has been, in my opinion, fragmented in leaving the spiritual aspects of a person's beingness out of the treatment plan. And I felt that, well, if this is the eternal part of us, how could we possibly leave the sacred matter out? And so that's why I coined the phrase sacred therapy, because I feel that it represents the fullness of who we are, because spirit, as far as I'm concerned, flows in and out of divinity without walls. And so we honor all paths and spiritual beliefs that help people get to a higher consciousness and tap into the fullness of who they are versus limiting them or making them feel squelched. And so that's what the term sacred therapy is trying to convey.
You know, it's so interesting because, you know, when I had gone to medical school, we would be trying to incorporate and say, you know, you really need to listen to the patient, you need to pay attention, you need to listen to their whole body, mind, and spirit and everything. But not a lot of people really understood what those words meant, and neither did your clients. So it was really a learning experience to be able to say, you know, let's talk about things. You know, when you have, as an example, a headache, and someone says, well, I have a really bad headache, and you go in and you say, I want my headache fixed, I want it gone away, but yet they don't ask what is contributing to it. Or when you go to a regular physician, they will say, well, I think your headache, let's do an MRI, we'll fix your headache then, you know, we'll find out what it, if there's a cause on film that will be able to take care of that headache. And of course,
exactly.
Most people come back, they have nothing on their x-ray, and they say, okay, so then we're going to treat your symptoms, we're going to give you medications, we're going to stop the pain, which is what you told me you're in. And they try to take away the physical pain. And so many people, I think when we classify them as maybe having mental health issues or having emotional issues, sometimes it's just because they aren't heard or they don't have such a unique way of getting their message across what's really hurting them. Sometimes those headaches have nothing to do with a physical pain. They're just showing up that way. And it could be something at home. It could be something at work. It could be their way of taking in the energy of the world. And it's just causing this inner strife or this inner conflict in their body, which turns around and shows up as disease, what we always call disease. And that's really just an imbalance. But yet we still keep going to the same. It's sort of like you're going to the water fountain and you were demanding, you know, that water nourish you, but, you know, hey, coming out of there is only water. It's empty. It doesn't have sugars or vitamins or, it's not a Kool-Aid fountain. You know, it's not going to fix everything that's up with you. So I really think that that's where healthcare is at such a crisis right now.
Well, I love exactly what you're saying because that's exactly what I say in my book and you use the word energy, which is exactly the point here. I think that when we're talking to clinicians or doctors or healers that have the fragmented approach of going straight to just the medical model, that it doesn't serve our clients well. And so when as a metaphysician, and since I'm both a metaphysician and psychotherapist, I love the fact that I have that bridge of both places. And so I try to go to the energy basis of the matter, because everything, whether it's a headache, whether it's depression, whether it's any symptomology, it basically is a manifestation in some form of matter, whether it's solid, liquid, gas, and gas being that subtle energy places. But a lot of New Age concepts, people are just saying them sort of flippantly when they say, well, everything's energy. But when I say it, when I say that energy basis, I'm talking about that the energy is the capacity of the body temple to perform a task, that being the amount of heat or light or radiation or power that's being released and absorbed as life force or what we call vital essence, which is spirit. So the energy basis of any diagnosis, mental or physical, as it relates to sacred therapy, is that divine essence or life force that you're talking about, because even Einstein taught that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's only transferred. So if someone is upset about something, and Louise Hay did a beautiful job of this, and I stand on her shoulders and so many others who talked about symbolic meaning with, as you said, we call dis-ease versus disease, my philosophy fits right in there, that these are representations. And so if we go straight to the energy basis of the matter, when someone comes up with a manifestation and look at the fullness of it, mind, body, and spirit, and not leave that spirit part out, I think that it helps clients come back into alignment faster, which is what I call reactions. That's why I don't even use the word disorder. The medical model likes to say, describe things as disorders, but that's not consistent in my training as a metaphysician with the laws of creation, because everything comes forth with the same process, whether it's wellness or dis-ease. And so I like to use the term reaction or divine intention. And so if a person is having a reaction to something, it's something in their environment, something in their psyche that is not jiving with the rest of what they want. So if they're coming from old school parents or something like that and they really want to do something else, I had a client, you know, who was having a bunch of headaches because he wanted to live a gay lifestyle, but it was against his parents' preference for him. And so he was having these headaches, and from a metaphysical perspective, a headache is two disturbing thoughts that are not in sync with one another. So he was being pulled in two directions. And so no matter how many MRIs or something, they couldn't find anything. But once he came to me and we started talking about the conflictual energy split within him, and were able to get him to line up with his own intentions and allow him to give himself permission to be who he came forth to be, his headache stopped instantly. You know, he didn't need any more aspirin. He didn't need any more tests. That was the manifestation of how it was taking on a physical manifestation when it was emotional. And so this is exactly what you're talking about, that we see happen a lot. But I think that the integrative movement in medicine, where there now is, even though it's a minority of them, there is integrative medicine that's beginning to try to honor the fullness, mind, body, and spirit, which Eastern philosophy has been doing forever, but us Westerners have pretty much fragmented treatment. Okay, this is mental, see a mental person. This is physical, see a physical person. This is social, see a sociologist. We haven't pulled it all together as a whole, and that's what I'm trying to add to a call for in my book, that we look at things holistically. Yes.
And I know, you know, myself as being a naturopathic physician, my medical history form is 12 pages long because we do ask those questions, you know. Are you happy? Have you been abused? When is your best time in life? What are your goals in life? So we do ask all those questions. But also, too, you know, when you sit down and you talk to a regular MD, you'll ask them, you know, you're a heart doctor, and you don't ask them anything about their nutrition. You don't ask them anything about what their life is at home. You don't ask them if they've ever been abused or not. But then you wonder why they have a broken heart and a clogged up heart, and you're doing bypass on them when they're 50 years old. It's because, you know, as we see it, potentially you and I, is that that may be that they just froze. They just held on. Your heart can just you know, sometimes when you slam your, you bump your elbow or you slam your finger in the door mistakenly and you get that shock to your system. Well, a lot of times people grow up with those shocks, and those shocks tend to be when your body, it just freezes or it just contracts and it pulls in and you aren't able to release that. You kind of believe that that's part of you and you continue to hold on to that. And that's where a lot of things, you know, happen in your 50s, 60s, and 70s when you just, you're like up against a wall. And sometimes those walls will take you down to your knees, and sometimes those, you know, those walls will just take you out of this space. You know, it's just time to vacate and it's time to go. But what we are also saying, too, is these issues that you may be coming up with and, you know, having troubles or having a mental health issue or an emotional issue, it's not always the worst thing in the world. It's not always the best, but it's not always the worst. But it will also bring you to awareness. Which is, so if you reframe that and say, you know, I'm having this issue and, you know, I really want to learn more about it, which is really cool. Instead of saying, I have this issue and, oh, woe is me, and it, you sort of feel like you have the name of your disorder tattooed on your head, you know, every time you see a doctor, well, I'm depressed, I'm this, you know, every time you have a sentence or a conversation, you're using the word depression, and I have to tell you my story about depression, or I have to tell you my story about abuse. You know, there's times when you have to say, isn't it fabulous that I went through this? Look at what I learned from that, and maybe reframe
exactly.
It. You know, because really there is no other place to be. You have, when you get up the next day, it's your choice to either keep it labeled on your head, you know, or say, hey, I'm good to go. I'm not that today.
I think that people get into a practice vibration of it because they haven't had the reframing, and that's where with all 170 diagnoses that I redescribed and redefined in the book, that's what I'm doing. I'm reframing that so that they can see it from a holistic, positive point of view and begin to release the negative, sick, defective type of thing, because many people, I think that when something has happened, and some clinicians are guilty of telling people that, well, they're going to have this thing the rest of their life, but that they can manage it versus letting them know that they can absolutely release it. And I think that if people know that regardless of what they've been through, they can release it and come back into alignment. And so when we attach from a spiritual place the word I am to anything, I am depressed, I am sick, I am this, we are owning it, and so we are creating more of it from the laws of creation. And so that's why I say to people, many people with addiction would say to me, well, you know, I'm always going to be in recovery. And I said, well, that's because that's a belief that you've inherited, that's a meme, and that you've decided that you are going to incorporate, but you don't have to think of it that way. I want you to believe that if it's gone, it's completely gone, and that you go forth with your rest of your life healthy, whole, and complete, that your well-being is assured. But many people think that because something happened to them, which is why in my assessment the biopsychosocial is the traditional model, but I created the psychospiritual biographical questionnaire in my book that gives them another way of incorporating the spiritual aspects in their questioning of themselves of what happened to them. And so that they can see that that's life that's been lived, whatever happened up to yesterday. And so when you say people get in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they're still carrying stuff that they didn't release in their 20s and 30s or 40s, it's because they got into this practice vibration of it. And so at that vibrational resonance, that's their attraction point. But once they can elevate their vibration to a higher consciousness about it, and awareness of it, then that's their new attraction place, and those new experiences that they've been wanting, which is the joy of living in the first place, have a way they can now allow it. But as long as they're focused on yesterday or focused on what went wrong, then they don't realize that that's their attraction place and that like attracts like, so they're going to get more of it. And so that's where I try to clearly explain the universal principles in my book for people to understand that you can always come back into alignment. I like how Wayne Dyer said, your well-being is one thought away. It really is. And I know it sounds incredible for most people that that's just impossible. But when we break a thought down the way I do in my book, it's very possible that we can do it. And even I was a diehard, too. I didn't believe all of this. I thought this was a bunch of positive thinking foolishness, too, back in my 20s. But once I realized, wow, it's something to this, that I really do have mighty influence over my thoughts and the direction of my thought, and that my well-being exists within the direction of my thought, that I'm going to test this out. And I tested it out, and voila, I kept realizing that I could feel better when I thought thoughts over here, and not just because it was the positive thing. It was because those thoughts was releasing serotonin because they were positive thoughts. And these thoughts were releasing cortisol, which made me feel awful because they were negative thoughts. And once I understood the brain chemistry that was tied into thinking and a thought, my whole life changed. And so I was able to release all of the things, my depression and my anxiety. And like many of our listeners today, I came through all of that. I had been abused. I had been raped. I'd been molested. I'd been all of that. But none of that has affected my last two decades once I got it clear of how I could affect my future and have a wonderful life that I live now. And so, and any time I get out of alignment now, because I'm still a person who came through the conditioning like everybody else, and so it still amazes me, though, with all of my knowledge, how conditioned we have been, because it's so easy to get back into that old path. But I have to turn my thoughts back and remember also, like I prescribe in the book, to getting to a place that's going to align me up with well-being, and it always works. And so this is why I wrote the book, because I see that myself and so many of my clients over my last 18 years of being a therapist, this is actually my 19th year, got better quicker and stayed in alignment longer. I mean, nobody's aligned 24/7, not the Pope, not me, not you, not anyone. But having the tools of knowing how to bring ourselves back into alignment, where we feel better and where we feel the fullness of our being, it's just amazing. It's really a beautiful process.
I think to be honest and to be human is when you say, you know, when you look at a flat line and you say these arrows pointing downward used to be how I did it before. There were more down than up. And then now you say, I'd like to be more up than down. But just to realize that when we say we want to be in balance, sometimes there are those days, as you've said, you know, where something, you'll feel like it came out of left field and it will say, whoa, and you'll say, okay, I see it and I recognize it now, and it doesn't have to take me as low as it did before. It doesn't have to have that hold for decades as it did before, and it can just pass through me and I'm good to go. Or
exactly.
But also to realize you're human, and if you do get upset and if you do get pulled down, that may just be what you need to be to say, okay, I'm just going to let this be, but I will come out because I did before. So many people are afraid to say, you know, when I have a slip or something happens that I'm wrong, or I can't do it any better, or it always has control over me. People will say, you know, I didn't do it to you, you know, these crazy words that people say, you know, you just look at them like, do I have an antenna sticking out of my head? You know, what's going on here? Something's wrong. And so to be able to say, you know, it's going to be okay, be human, but then be able to bring yourself back up again is important.
Exactly. Exactly. I think we have so much shame within us as spiritual beings have in this physical experience because so many people, many of our source figures require perfection from us. And of course, perfection, that's the one word I wish wasn't in the dictionary, but the term perfection for me has taken on new meaning, to be perfectly imperfect, because I think that that's what we came here for, these lessons and expansion and to learn from one another and to learn from our own experience. And so when we're having a moment, and it's just a moment, and it can be several moments, it can be an hour, but
right.
however long you feel that you have had a fall in consciousness where you're feeling depressed or sad or anxious or weary, to know that you don't have to stay there, like you said. And sometimes, right. you know, I have several tools in the book, 24 different exercises to help you come out of that. But what I say to people, sometimes you just don't feel like working on yourself. Sometimes you just, you know, it's my party and I'll cry if I want to. It's one of those
right.
moments. And you just allow yourself, you know, tears are a river that leads somewhere. And it's okay to have that moment. That's an energetic pathway too. And then once we got out the ugly cry, then we can go ahead and now put ourselves in a place where we deliberately, intentionally choose a thought that we know feels better, that's going to elevate our vibration to a place where we can now secrete the type of neurotransmitters that will give us the natural healing endorphins that keep us in a sense of well-being. But it's unrealistic. I do get clients many times who panic, and they've been doing so great for several weeks or several months, and they call me, mm-hmm. oh, my God, I've had a bad day. And I'm like, that's part of life. It's this ebb and flow. Nobody stays
right.
aligned 24/7. I think that it's impossible. So I think that I love that you added the human component to that, because some people think that well-being means I should, you know, just always be in a meditative place where a building could fall on me and I would just say ouch and keep going, that nothing should penetrate this state of peace. And I think it's just life is too diverse with so much stimuli out there coming at us all the time that it's natural to react to some of that. But once we realize that we don't have to be a victim of reaction, that we can maintain our own sense of self and sense of well-being despite what's going on around us, like the news or something like that, we don't have to focus our attention on it. So it's the focusing of thought that we have, I think, as the free will to decide that direction of our thought. So so good, yeah. So just know that it's okay, but as long as we know that we're feeling good most of the time, that we can bring ourselves back most of the time through our own self-talk and own internal guidance, then we're doing well. You know, it's a majority, but if you're feeling, you know, it can go either way any day, 50-50, you know, then you want to do a little more of the work, use more of the tools that I'm offering in my book or other sources that can help you to have a greater quality of life where the majority of the time you're feeling good.
And absolutely, too, because I think sometimes with this new energy work, you know, that everybody is saying, I'm going to keep myself in a good place. I'm not going to be around negative things. I'm not going to blah, blah, blah. I mean, I live in the city of New Orleans. Sure, it's great to come here and visit. But let me tell you, the crime is out of control. Out of control. And we sit here and say, but I'm not being affected. I'm not this. I'm not that. But yet, sometimes it takes people to say, I might not be affected. I'm not going to take in that negative energy of it. However, I can act to do good things or to change that. So to still believe that you can also affect other things. In other words, I can start a watch in my area. I could start reporting to the police. I could go to the police meetings. I could find out what's a good area or not a good area to live in. I could go help the people or the victims or whatever. So you still have to believe that you live in this world, though, also. You know, because I hear so many, they call themselves gurus of good peace, or, you know, I'm going to be in the oneness. I'm going to be standing on top of the mountain and shining it all out there. Well, that's great, but we are humans and we live on the earth, and we aren't here to just be in that glass bubble. We're also here to be and mingle and be in the game, and you have someone sitting next to you or across from you or across the street from you or whatever. We're all together in this, and to remember that we are all part as one, and that is such an important factor that I think is getting overlooked in this new awakening thing. So many people are taking it to the extreme, and they're standing on top of that mountain, you know, and it's like, whoa. okay, you know. And that's where a lot of other people who haven't quite gotten to the top of the mountain that they believe are feeling disease, or they're feeling a lot of emotional and mental issues.
I think that when it comes to what you're saying right there, from the standpoint of how I see it with like attracting like, I think that we're all in different places. And so, but I think regardless of what place we're in, we're all reaching for that well-being. I think it's built into our DNA. And so whether it's the person who is a criminal reaching for well-being through thinking that he or she has to steal it or hurt someone else in order to get it, versus the person on the mountaintop that feels a sense of achieving it from that vantage point, I think that it depends on where a person is vibrating. And so I think that for a person who's at a higher vibrational place to come off of the mountaintop, so to speak,
right,
to resonate with someone who's at crime, I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think that what I've noticed because of the conditioning is that most people who have a high vibration can affect the vibrational resonance in a group just by walking in a room, and it can uplift that. But if mm-hmm. those people who are in a lower vibrational place are constantly saying things to this person who's at a higher one, it's a greater chance that they will bring this higher person down than the higher
right.
person bringing them up, because the person who is down is the one who is more desperate and further away from their alignment with the fullness of their being. And so they have a more of a commitment to it because they don't believe that they can have it. So their belief in not being able to reach that high place is just as solid as the person who's in that high place who feels that it really is there. And so I don't think that either one of those are invalid places to be. We are where we are. But I do think that the best thing that a person who's having a that's at a high place can do for someone that's not at a high place, that's suffering, is to see them in a high place vibrationally and send them well-meaning, but not necessarily feel the need that they have to go and interface with that person in a place where the person could affect their vibration by not believing that what they can't hear you. I think that vibrationally some people can't hear you. I mean, I have sessions all the time where a person sometimes they can't hear. They can't hear the very well-being that I'm offering and sharing. They can't hear it. It's not that they're not listening, but they're vibrationally at a place where they just can't even hear it. And so I think that I don't think anybody's gone off the deep end by being so vibrationally attuned that they are feeling those mountaintop experiences so often that it seems as if they're on cloud nine. I think that they've practiced and worked themselves into a way that they're able to appreciate it more often, and therefore in their appreciation of it, it happens more because of the laws of attraction. But the same is happening with the person who is saying that they can't eat or they can't get a job or they have to beat up someone or steal someone or hurt someone. They're creating more and more of it. The more that they keep saying that they can't have it or don't see how they can get it, the more it shows up in their experience because the same laws of creation apply to them wherever they are. And so I think the work is in trying to come into alignment with the fullness. If they realize that the person who's on the mountaintop or the person they're stealing from has the same God source in them that they have within them, that it's not, you know, the have and have nots, that it's available to all mankind, then I think that they would work on themselves and fix, self-correct their own vibration and also join a higher consciousness more time too.
You know, I think so many times when you go and you ask for help, let's say at any healthcare professional, sometimes you sit down and you do the best you can at sharing your experiences and what you need, but sometimes they just aren't asked for. I know I had spoken with someone, I think it was a while back, and they were talking about domestic abuse. And they said, well, my doctor never asked me anything about that. And then I spoke to another advocate of domestic abuse, and he said, I can't understand why any healthcare practitioner would not ask that question. And then we come around to the other thing. Well, they don't ask about it, and I've asked MDs about that. And they said, we can't ask about it because the profession says you listen to the symptoms, you test for what you can, and once you test, you have to have a treatment for that. So in other words, I'm not going to ask about your domestic abuse if I'm just a cardiologist because I don't have a test or a treatment for you, and that's not my, quote, scope of practice. And so I think that's where we get a lot of people confused in saying, well, do I have to have 10 or, you know, how many practitioners do I have to have? How can I seek out working on myself? If I'm one person, why do I need all these short-term specialists? And they still aren't addressing my spiritual or mentally emotional. But that's really what you're saying is that you can do that. You can look full circle in that and be able to see where their sense of imbalance is.
Well, the fragmentation that you're talking about in terms of having to have several professionals, but if we look at it broader and step back, because I see both sides of that in the sense that what I'm saying in my book, too, is that the onus is on the soul that comes forth, not the soul that they're going to for help. And so if people could begin to take more personal responsibility for their wellness versus asking the professionals to be the ones that garner all of their information. If they go into a session and it's asked, how can I be helpful to you? And you present your symptoms or what's going on, and you fail to share all that you know is manifesting in your life, then it's not their job to read your mind or to do such a qualified interview that they cover from your birth to the day you showed up in their office. That's where a person has to begin taking personal responsibility. And if the healthcare professional can say to the person, okay, well, let's go back to your example with the heart or the headache. Okay, you're telling me that your heart is hurting. Okay, well, my discipline, because my specialty is heart, I'm going to do these tests, but I want you to know that there's other ways that your symptoms also may be able to be interpreted. There's something called holistic health, and I want you to know that there's some books you might be able to pick up on that talk about symbolic meaning that may be beneficial to you. That by itself could help push the person along if the person doesn't want to question them about domestic violence or something like that or whatever else may be going on, because it's just too much life experience to pinpoint what specifically is happening with anyone. But I think that many people resign too much on the professionals instead of taking personal responsibility for their health and well-being. That's why I'm saying in my book that it's so important that we come back into alignment on our own and for ourselves, for self's sake, versus trying to live our life the way we think somebody else wants us to, whether it's parents, whether it's church, whether it's society. Then when you're living the life you came forth to live, any symptoms or matter that shows up in your life that has gone out of alignment, when you present with a professional that specializes in that area, you're giving them a more full explanation of what you think is going on because you're more self-aware. But if you're not self-aware and you're just going in yourself and the limits of whatever Hippocratic oath that particular professional has taken, they are bound by that. And so unless they go and seek out a holistic healer or integrative medicine person who immediately would know to ask about or at least point you in the direction of letting you know, this is one way to look at it. I'll deal with your body temple, but hey, here is some other ways that we can see what's happening out with you sociologically in your family as well as spiritually with you. And I think all of these would be helpful. And so that's how I see it, in the sense of not so much letting the practitioner off the hook, but I see it as co-creative, that we have our part, but if you don't tell me, I won't know. And now, of course, because I'm seasoned and done this so much, I'm going to have excellent interview with you the initial time to try to extract as much as I can from that. But other than a therapist who we're known to do the emotional part, many therapists don't question the biological part. Many of them wouldn't do as intensive medical background, and nor should they, because that's not our area. And so it's the same with the doctor that wouldn't do as deep of a psychological one. So I understand the boundaries within help, but I need the audience to understand their role too, that you're a co-creator in this. You don't just submit and yourself to the process without having your intentions, because if you don't have question, then no answer is evoked. You're not summoning an answer from us as clinicians if you don't have a question. And so you have to formulate your symptomology in a way that we can hear it, so that we can give you the right, the proper referral or the proper treatment plan to address your matter.
And I think that's so vitally important to understand for the listeners, is that really this is not, you know, someone's going to fix you. You really need to work within yourself and bring forth what you need to have, you know, translated to your provider or someone who's helping you. You can't expect, as we have said, everybody to know everything. It just doesn't happen. And that's so vitally important. And I think with mental health concerns, people don't want to have that conversation. They don't want to talk about it. They don't know what you're looking for to be able to help them. And it's just a quandary right now, but I think your book has a really great place to start.
Well, thank you. I think what you just said about when it comes to mental health, that some don't want you to know, that's so important too, because many times when a doctor sends a patient to me for mental health treatment, they have to sign a release of confidentiality for me to send the diagnosis back to their primary care physician or something. And most of my clients will say, well, you're not going to tell them this. I don't want my doctor to know this or that. And so with that, the confidentiality, the patients do seem to understand these boundaries too. They're like, well, I'm going to my PCP for my flu or my headache or my backache, but I don't want to get into what's happening in my relationship with them. So even if their primary physician were to ask those questions from them, they may not feel comfortable asking them, even if the PCP was prepared to give a more full interview with the person. They may realize that that person doesn't want them to have those details as well, and which is why sometimes they make the proper referral to sending them to someone like you and I. And so it's all relative. You know, then there are other patients I have who've told their PCPs everything. They're like, oh, no, I tell my doctor everything. And so they don't see a need for any boundaries around that, and so they're prepared to be show up fully and just very open. And so I think it's an individual preference when it comes to that. And mental health, because of the taboo and stigma with it, many, many are afraid to share that type of information with a professional because they're afraid that they're going to be Baker-acted and thrown in a hospital somewhere if they tell them some of those things. And some have even been afraid when they told me, sometimes 3 months into treatment, they're like, you know, I was so scared to tell you this or that when I first met you because I wasn't sure if you were going to Baker-act me. And I was like, oh, my goodness, mm-hmm. No, Baker-act should be used as a last resort, that, you know. So, but many therapists do misinterpret because they haven't been trained about certain types of mental and emotional matter, such as the diversity amongst schizophrenia and things like that. Sometimes they don't mix clairvoyant behaviors. It's not really honored in the mental health field, and so sometimes that's misdiagnosed. And so I understand why the public has fear sharing some of those types of thoughts with a professional, not knowing what the professional will do with it, which is why that questionnaire in my book allows them to speak freely about that, because they're keeping that information for themselves, but I'm asking it of them for them to know that, hey, this was a question that was okay to answer. It's all right if you see auras. It's all right if you saw your loved one when they transition, that these things don't make you crazy and those types of things that they're afraid to say out loud. So It runs a gamut. It's so diverse when it comes to mental and emotional reactions, and so it is a sacred matter, which is why I call it sacred therapy, that the details of our life are sacred, and so healing it can be too.
You know, it's interesting you said about the spiritual part about clairvoyant or auras. I can remember at one time a priest, I had gone to a retreat because I'm Catholic, probably about maybe 4 decades ago. And at the end, I sat down with the priest. I don't know why. Don't even remember the whole circumstances. But I can remember distinctly his sentence. He says, "So did you come to talk to me to see if you're possessed?" And I went, "What?" You know, and you realize that, you know, just as you said, you have to be super careful with what you're saying to who. And it's sort of like you said, you know, somebody telling you 3 months later, they had tested you out to be able to see what your comfort level was with their craziness or their things that they felt might be out of the norm. And that's really important that you have that sense of trust and that you do have, find someone to help you that is, will say, "I have no labels here, you know, this is just what it is. Just tell me what it is. It's no big deal." And to really be able to find practitioners that don't label and have no labels, that's so vitally important.
Right, because from the metaphysical perspective, you know, I would never see something as someone being possessed or anything like that.
It's crazy.
Not, or schizophrenia of something being real or unreal. I basically see it as physical or non-physical. And from the standpoint of there being multi-dimensions of beingness, mm-hmm. that we believe in life and life. So when a person releases their body temple, they just go into the next dimension. And so some people have the gift of being able to see into that dimension and came forth wanting to be aware of the dualness of their beingness. And so that's clairvoyance or psychic abilities. And others who are able to see into the non-physicals may sometimes be labeled as schizophrenia and things like that. And so many people end up having fear because people aren't taught that we live in a multi-dimensional universe and that some people can pierce time and space better than others, or that wasn't their intention to do. So that's why they preferred a more physical, solid matter experience. And so there's many ways of being human, and I think we come into the physical to demonstrate that, and that we're more than our body temples. And when we're up against a medical model that says that only the scientific method matters, and that this is, we have a normative curve, and that there's a line here that says this is too much, and then there's a line over there that says this is too little, and anybody who has too much or too little are disordered. I just totally disagree with that. I just feel that life is so expansive beyond the confounds of the mundane, and that we need to allow all human experience to be inside this massive box as opposed to putting tape around this area that we prefer. I just think it's very unfair of what we do to one another, and that stimulates anxiety and fear in people who know that, they cut the line right there, and that's where I am. Better not say that.
Yeah.
And so it frightens people. And so my book is to embrace all souls that have come forth, to let them know that, no, you're not sick, you're sacred, and all is well. and that something may have gone out of alignment a little bit, and you can come back into alignment, or you came forth with this particular matter as a divine intention in the first place, and let's line up our energy back with what you may have intended to live part or all of your physical experience with. And so it's a beautiful process, the journey from psychotherapy to sacred therapy. It's brought so many people relief. That's the biggest thing I keep hearing since the book came out in January, is that, oh, my God, if I had known this 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, my whole life would have been different. That says something to me that this is time coming, that you know, people are tired of being put in these boxes, labeled, stigmatized, and they want to be free, and everyone wants to feel connected with the source of our being, this creator, regardless of the terminology we use to describe that. And so I offer anyone listening that relief, and so please, you know, check out the book.
So, Dr. Kemp, we just went right through this hour, so it would be great if you could tell us about your website and where the listeners could purchase your book. That would be wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. The book is available on Amazon.com or any bookseller, and it's available in both paperback and e-book, so you can get it in Kindle, Nook, iPad, or any of that. And my website is DrAmeliaKemp.com. That's DrAmeliaKemp.com. And since this is going to be aired on Sedona Radio, I am doing a sacred therapy retreat going through the 8 steps Labor Day weekend in Sedona, and we do have one spot left if someone wants to join us there. But otherwise, I'll be speaking in Sedona on August 29th at the Sedona Creative Life Center there, doing a lecture on the book. And it's a free lecture, so anyone can come out there, and I'll be happy to sign your book if you want to get one there or order one before I see you. So, yes.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Kemp. But, you know, I think this is something that people just need to say, you know, I'm not going to box myself up anymore, and it's okay. And I'll just find myself somewhere in these pages, and I will work through it. And I think that's what we're all trying to say, is just work through it and do the best you can each day, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you for having me. This has been an honor. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and have a great day.
You too.
So if you'd like more information about Dr. Amelia Kemp, her listing is on today's show page. You just click on the link. You'll go directly to her website. You'll also be able to purchase the book. The link is there. And thank you so much for being with us today. But the message here is that we are all human. We are all okay. We are all going to make mistakes. We're going to be, you know, we're going to go through the good, the bad, the ugly, but we're all going to be okay. And that's really important to focus on, is that it is all right. You know, just reach out, ask for help. You don't like that help, reach out and ask for some other help, you know. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio, and the show is also available to listen to on archives and iTunes. Please do post your comments. We welcome each comment. Thank you and have a great day.